Welcome to On the Go, an on-road transportation podcast with Clean Cities. In this episode, we're talking about the rapid build-out of Oklahoma's electric vehicle charging network. To kick us off, let's introduce our hosts. I'm Molly Putzig.
And I'm Joanna Allerhand. Today, we will be joined by two guests with expertise in deploying electric vehicle charging infrastructure. They'll be discussing the Charge OK grant program.
This program used VW settlement funds to put $3.1 million toward installing EV chargers, resulting in 90 new DC fast and dual port level 2 stations. Here to tell you more are Eric Pollard from the Association of Central Oklahoma Governments, which houses Central Oklahoma Clean Cities, and Leon Ashford from the Oklahoma Department of Environmental Quality. Welcome, Eric and Leon. Thanks so much for being here. Let's get started.
Eric, tell me more about the rapid build-out of Oklahoma's EV charging network.
So for Oklahoma on the charging network, we really, it's sort of a situation where the stars are aligned, and in many ways we got kind of lucky. But with that luck, you know, it goes all the way back to the late 2000s. And, you know, the leadership at the state legislature looking at alternative fuels, and at that time mainly being compressed natural gas, and the passage of some tax credits that have really been some of the best in the nation and allowing for companies and others to expand alternative fuel vehicles and infrastructure deployments. And so, you know, over the years, you know, those tax credits have been discussed at the legislature and part of, you know, the strengths of the Clean Cities program and working with our stakeholders to advocate for those incentives since then. But fast forward to 2016, the first sort of federal highway alternative fuel corridor requests, Central Oklahoma Clean Cities and Tulsa Clean Cities working closely with our state partners to put forth the first corridor nominations. And then, you know, it kind of, the ball just kind of got rolling there from that to the, you know, Electrify America and sending requests to them for potential locations. And then eventually the Volkswagen settlement allocation to the state that we're going to talk a lot about today.
Great, thank you. So I understand that since 2018, Oklahoma has had the largest growth of EV charging ports of any state. And in 2020 alone, ports increased by 122%. Can you talk more about the factors that influenced that growth?
Absolutely, yeah. You know, early on in the discussions about Volkswagen settlement dollars in the state, There was a pretty broad agreement amongst stakeholders that we really wanted this to be a statewide charging network. And a lot of that, you know, came together within the Clean Cities coalitions in the state and our combined efforts with an EV coalition as well. So we had great buy-in from many stakeholders, and we had rural cooperatives advocating and communicating their priorities for EV adoption on a statewide basis, even in those rural areas. You know, the understanding that rural drivers have, you know, almost the most to gain from driving electric, whether it's, you know, commuting or otherwise, you know, putting more miles on vehicles and things like that. So we were pretty unified in that message. You know, for the Association of Central Oklahoma Governments, or the Central Oklahoma Clean Cities Coalition, is housed. We wanted to balance that with, you know, deployments within Central Oklahoma. Oklahoma City is one of the largest regions that's still in attainment of air quality standards, and electrification is a big part of that effort. So we were really pleased with how that went, those discussions about the Volkswagen settlement and the decisions that were made at the state level. And then really those stars aligning that I mentioned were the tax credit combined with, you know, dollars coming from Volkswagen, and really private sector partnerships and companies that were ready to come to the table and say, we want to make this investment. We're gonna monetize the tax credit. We're gonna take advantage of this, and we're gonna hit the ground running and literally driving all around the state, trying to come up with agreements, lease agreements for space for charging around the state. And so 2019 was sort of a watershed moment. The tax credit was shifting it from 75% for EV charging to 45%. And we had one of our stakeholders, Francis Energy, really making that full sprint towards the end of 2019. We're able to, put a lot of charging out there.
So with the VW funds from that, it looks like those were a big part of influencing that growth. I'm seeing that it was a $3.1 million for EV chargers from 2019 to 2021 and 90 new DC fast and dual port level 2 stations. A lot of that looks like it was accomplished under the Charge OK grant program. So Leon, could you tell us, how did you develop the Charge OK grant program?
The Oklahoma Department of Environmental Quality that received the VW Trust funds for the state of Oklahoma, we decided that we needed some partners. So we worked with Oklahoma Department of Transportation, the Oklahoma Secretary of Energy and Environment's office, and the Oklahoma Corporation Commission, which is in charge of electric generation here in Oklahoma. And the four entities designated one person from each, and we worked together to develop an idea of what we wanted in an EV charging station and applications and everything. We decided to have a 90-day open application where we would accept the applications. We also decided that for an EV charging station to be successful, it would need to be in a location that you would not mind spending a little bit of time at. We wanted to have locations that had 24 hours a day, had access at least to a bathroom and to water. That was the minimum. And hopefully to food, if a location had easy access to one or more restaurants close by, then that was a big thumbs up. Because we knew that you don't want to just go to an EV charging station, hook up your car and sit in it and wait for the charge. You'd rather use it being a little bit more productive.
Yeah, those are great starting points for looking at where you might want to put chargers. I'm curious, what criteria were used to prioritize charging station locations beyond that?
Beyond having the amenities, we were looking for the most chargers and the highest level chargers. If you're looking at an EV, at a level 3 fast charger, the minimum charging rate is 50 kW, and it goes up from there. And for example, the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, it has a requirement of 150 kW level. At the time that we started doing this back in 2018, 50 kW seemed like a really strong charger and very hefty, but they keep increasing the size of the chargers, kind of like early on with computers. You know, you wait a year or two and you get bigger and better. The faster chargers, you know, if you can reduce the amount of time spent charging, that's going to be a big plus. One thing I would like to tell any state or anyone who's just now starting on this, one of the things you need to do is don't assume a level of understanding or all the people who apply for a charger project. And you also need to understand, you need to make it clear that a level, that a charger, you know, a box, a charger is a charger. A lot of people kind of new to this area, whenever they see two connector types, they assume that's two chargers. We've had quite a few people who would put on their application that they're applying to put in four chargers, and we find out that they're actually applying to put in two chargers, but each one of them would have one CHAdeMO and one CCS terminal or cable connector on each side.
You know, I think, as you know, Leon's lesson there about, you know, you're going to have a variety of interested parties that want to go after the funding, that want to put in charging. And as we look forward to, you know, the IIJA funding, the infrastructure bill funding that's coming, I assume we're going to see those same things there. So I think this is an opportunity for the Clean Cities coordinators to get involved with whoever's running the program within the state. You know, since we undertook this in 2018, you know, there's new focuses, like the J40 initiative from the federal government, and the Clean Cities coordinators are going to be critical in you know, working with the state agencies to work with a lot of different groups to put in charging with a lot of different interests. So that's important moving forward.
Yeah, a lot of exciting growth in this area. So looking at those chargers, I'm wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about how the stations were involved, who was involved, and what their process was.
We had some municipalities, but most of the municipalities and the colleges applied for level two chargers for their locations, which makes sense there. We had, I contacted for the most part, every chain convenience store company here in the state of Oklahoma, and tried to make sure that they were aware of the possibility. Some of them were interested and applied, and some were not. We, as Eric said, we were extremely lucky to have a private company that was interested in installing chargers around in the state of Oklahoma and using the tax credits that we had available here. And they were responsible for installing a lot of chargers and installing a lot of them in locations that probably wouldn't have been interested otherwise. And that helped substantially in increasing the number of chargers here in the state of Oklahoma.
Great. So I think anyone working in this field knows there are inevitably going to be challenges that come up in any project. So could you tell us a little bit about what were some of the project, the challenges that the Charge OK program faced and how you overcame them?
One challenge that we didn't solve it ourselves, but the private company that was here installing chargers, we had a situation where we had someone to apply and they were going to put some level two charging and one level three charger in a turnpike situation. And a turnpike is where you need the fastest charging possible, and a level two charger won't do that. So we were fortunate in that the people who applied for those placing this in their convenience stores along the turnpikes were approached by the private company, and they were this company basically took over the contract from them, and instead of putting in level two chargers and one minimum power level three, they put in some higher level, all level three chargers, which was great, because if they had put in the level twos, they probably would never have been used. So that was one problem that we were able to overcome. Another hint for the states that haven't done this yet but are looking at it, you need to think really hard about if a company applies for 10 different projects, are you going to separate each one of those projects into a separate contract by itself, or try to keep them together? Or if you keep them together, are you going to line itemize them in your contract so you can keep each one separate? It's a very surprising from the time you accept an application, we've had some site host to go bankrupt, so that project could not happen. We've had other project applications where the entity applying after a month or two of not doing anything, they decide to back out of the contract. The longer you go without them actively working on the installation, the higher probability they may end up not completing the contract. That's very disappointing for us.
I would add, you know, one of the things that we saw early on is in trying to build a statewide network, obviously you have your investor-owned utilities, your rural cooperatives, and your municipal power authorities. And so, you know, each of them have unique rate structures and demand charges. And this is, you know, an area where maybe there's, you know, challenges are going to continue. Just something that the folks that design the programs, and definitely the Clean Cities coordinators and the stakeholders they're working with to build out the network, you know, there's not a silver bullet right now, but it's an ongoing thing I think we need to have in mind as we move forward here, especially looking at the infrastructure bill. And I think, you know, Leon can maybe speak to this, but I think it's interesting to see which stations are doing well, and which ones maybe aren't seeing as much utilization. I think DEQ has, you know, over time collected information on that usage, and that's great for us, obviously, because we can connect it with the emissions reductions and kind of get a glimpse of maybe where the EVs are growing. So actually, as of today, as of this record, we got some news that Oklahoma, our market share for EV of light duty sales in 2021 was over 2%, and that's from 0.2% in 2020. So you can't say exactly that the charging network is the big cause of that, but it definitely plays into it. So lots of growth moving forward, but definitely a big jump. You know, the timing of this was really tough too. You know, a lot of these projects went into place maybe right before the pandemic, and so to get we maybe only have, you know, less than 1 year of data of usage data that we're looking at. So that adds another level of complexity to gauge our level of success.
So a couple other things that I think had come up during this, I was hoping that you could speak to, were an initial issue with some areas where maybe there wasn't great cell coverage, and also a lack of station payment accessibility. It sounds like you guys overcame those problems.
Yeah, well, we didn't, but our the people who applied for the contract, the contracts did. They took steps to try to figure out how to get a better cell coverage, or sometimes when you're in a rural area, you have one cell company that's providing better coverage than the other, and apparently they worked with that and made sure that the connectors or the chargers had coverage. And as far as the payment, we've always, when we were first looking at this, we had several companies to come and provide information to us, and several companies wanted people to be able to go to a charger and not be a member of a network or anything, have to do anything in advance, but to be able to use that charger. And the charger, the companies that made the chargers said, that's okay, but we don't want credit card readers. Everyone knows you can put a skimmer on a credit card reader and have problems. And since some of these may not, they're not inside or anything like that, where they're constantly watched, they wanted to avoid any problems with that. Some of the companies do have fobs that they use instead of any kind of a network charge, a card or anything like that. And I believe some of them do have some kind of a network, their own network card, that if you get that, you can use any charger within their network and be able to use it. But we needed some way to overcome any kind of problem like that. And I believe all of our chargers do have a phone number posted where if you have any issues, you have a phone number that you can call and have them turn the charger on for you, or whatever it is that you need, or be able to make a payment using a credit card but over the telephone and not with a card reader.
Okay, yeah, this was an area too that I think, Clean Cities coalitions around the country can provide, that outlet and that that opportunity for, stakeholders that are actively using a new network to communicate any issues they may be having with the companies that put it in, and just allowing that platform to have those discussions and come up with solutions. So we had, fleets that had added vehicles in many ways because of the charging that was put out there, and were able to address issues quickly, both within those forums that the Clean Cities Coalition and the EV Coalition had, but also just one-on-one as stakeholders.
Okay.
I'd like to go back to the working or the people applying for different projects, working with their electric company. We did require in our application process that the whoever applied would go to their electric company and discuss what was needed for them. A lot of people might not quite understand that their electric supply might not be adequate for installing one of these chargers. And depending on the strength of the charger, they may have to the electric company might have to provide a heavier duty line to where they are, or they might have to install a larger transformer or something to that effect. Now, some of the electric companies might be willing to do that free because they know they're going to be selling you a lot more electricity, but other companies may not. So you really have to know what you're looking at your specific, with your specific company.
Okay, so safe to say it's important to work with your utility early and understand the options that are out there.
Yes, because another thing is it could, as Eric said, it could affect your utility bill depending on how it's structured. It could impact it quite a bit, or it might not impact it that much. It depends.
I did also want to mention quickly while we're talking about some of the challenges to overcome that I know it was the case in Oklahoma, like it is in a lot of places, that there are a lot of Tesla vehicles out there. Well, a lot of the charging stations that we're talking about here are not the non-proprietary networks. So just important to understand the availability of adapters for different vehicle types and charging types.
Yeah, and we, you know, part of, you know, the reasons why, you know, these ride and drive events are important and the engagement with the driver groups is, you know, those things have just come naturally, and they, you know, these adapters are shared within the Tesla Owners Club, and, you know, you see posts on their Facebook groups all the time of, hey, I'm taking a trip down here, can I borrow the adapter? So, you know, even with the issues of compatibility between Tesla and those chargers, you're still seeing use of the network within the Tesla community.
And some of the charging locations even have some adapters that they will loan the Tesla drivers.
So continuing on, I did want to talk about how you built on the success of the first round of funding to carry that on into a second round.
Well, it was actually kind of a eye-opening, or at one time I was looking at our network, the way it exists, and thinking about the different EV corridors or alt-field corridors that we have, and realizing we still had a lot of holes in our network. And I thought, well, in reality, the best use of these funds is to use them to get chargers installed in locations that might not otherwise get the charger. It's best to use these funds to, say, fund a project in a more rural area where it would be, you know, maybe several years before anyone ever thought about putting a charger there unless you fund it, instead of getting an additional, the bigger draw, or the more chargers that you're going to, or more charging that you're going to have, is usually in the urbanized areas. Well, a lot of our urbanized areas are covered pretty well right now, so it's best to use it in places where we have holes in our network. So for round two of the Volkswagen funding that we had, we looked at and designated specific locations and targeted those locations and accepted projects only for those locations. And we ended up with, I think it was, 11 DC fast chargers in 6 locations. Actually, we were hoping to get 13 in 7 locations, but we've had another project application to go down the tubes for us.
Well, that's too bad, but it sounds great that you were able to take the second round of funding and sort of zoom out your lens a little bit and get a bigger picture on what was still needed out there. So continuing on to that, how do you think the Charge OK program influenced charging station growth in the rest of Oklahoma?
I hope that it made it to where people have seen these chargers around and get more comfortable with where they might need it. There is are chargers available for them, and just trying to let the public know that we're out there. We don't have any specific signs or anything on our charging locations, so you may not be able to tell when you pull up to one that we helped fund it, but we don't. You know, the main thing is to have the charging locations out there and have them in use. And I think, well, I know that several of the entities that have applied for charging projects and received some funding from us, they have come back to us to let us know if there's any more money available, they're ready with other projects. I've had to refer most of them or tell them that the next round will be worked by the Oklahoma Department of Transportation, and that they needed to keep alert as to if the Oklahoma Department of Transportation comes out with an announcement about funding available, and that, you know, they need to keep their pencil sharp and their projects, their applications ready to submit. But I've also told them that there's a minimum requirement of 150 kW chargers, and there's a minimum of 4 chargers per charging location, which a lot of our charging locations might have had 1 charger or maybe 2, and quite a few of them were only 50 kW, so I'm not sure. I believe that it might be a bigger project than what they were expecting in the first place, but hopefully that information's available, will be available to them. And if they work with their electric companies, they can find out exactly what they would need to do to be able to apply and put in more chargers.
Yeah. And on that, Leon, I think, you know, a big part of Charge OK was, you know, just finding these locations and coming up with these lease agreements with, whether it's a grocery store or a convenience store or whatever it was, you now have those agreements in place. And so if charging does need to be upgraded, if it's, you know, if it's on the corridor and maybe they can go after some infrastructure bill dollars, the, you know, those agreements are in place and that infrastructure is there. So I would say, you know, the Charge OK project, we were able to pair a couple of the projects with other federal funding. In one example, the city of Edmond, which is a community just to the north of Oklahoma City, the city decided to go after funding for level 2 charging at a number of diverse locations. So they had, you know, they had a tennis center that they put charging at, city parks, and they seeing quite a bit of usage and are really happy with where their usage is at, even during the pandemic. So they've decided to make additional investments in level 2 at, I believe, 6 additional locations. So that's just one example of where the Charge OK funding has really spurred growth. And I think Leon may have touched on this a little bit, but with our lead applicant for Charge OK in Francis Energy, one of the, you know, success stories with the tax credit in place was that they weren't, you know, they took a lower cost share of the Charge OK funding. And that was, with them doing that, we were, I think, able to spread the funding a lot over a wider base.
Eric, can you tell us more about what benefits are provided by this new charging infrastructure, both in terms of air quality benefits and contributing to more EV adoption?
Yeah, so, you know, Oklahoma, we're an oil and gas state, and but, you know, central local McLean cities, we just celebrated our 25th anniversary last year. You know, we come at whatever opportunities there are out there with that, you know, clean cities mission with a fuel neutral approach. And so with electric vehicles, it's just an extension of what we've always done. So, you know, for the ACOG perspective, where our coalition is housed, there's sort of two pillars of what I tell people when they ask about this, when they say, really, EVs in an oil and gas state? And it's, you know, our Clean Cities mission has been consistent from the beginning. You know, we're looking at what fuels are out there, what clean transportation options are out there that will save fleets money, save consumers money. I mentioned that, you know, approach for rural drivers that we, you know, in rural Oklahoma, you can save, you know, more money than someone driving, you know, within one of our major cities. And so that's one of the main things that's driving it. For, you know, the other side of it obviously is the emissions benefit. So for Oklahoma City, one of the largest regions in the country that's still in attainment of air quality standards, transportation electrification is critical. You know, we're a spread out community, a lot of sprawl. You know, ACOG and the Clean Cities approach is, you know, balanced. You know, we're looking at those opportunities for transit expansion, public transportation, transportation alternative, bike, ped, energy efficient mobility systems work, EAMS work, congestion mitigation. All those things are on the table, but single occupancy vehicle travel is a reality. It's going to continue to be the main mode of transportation within Oklahoma. So for us, you know, the more vehicles we can get over to electric, the better we are in maintaining clean air, staying in attainment of air quality standards. And so part of what we're doing now is communicating that with the public of, here are some of the emissions reductions efforts we need to take. And if not, we're facing a pretty drastic situation if we go into non-attainment and have those additional federal regulations come down on the community.
And how do you think this investment will help broaden EV adoption from the early adopters to more mainstream?
Yeah, so I mentioned the good news that we just got about our adoption numbers and the growth in sales. And so, you know, what Leon talked about in that visibility, you know, we'll continue to build off the strength of the network. Leon mentioned signage. I think there's more we can do on putting signage out there to inform the consumer. So we're going to try to build off the strength of the network, and the infrastructure bill funding is certainly key. You know, but there's also just been a lot of policy discussions that have been spurred and will continue to happen around electric vehicles. It's, if you watch the Super Bowl, I mean, what, two or three commercials were electric vehicles. So, you know, we get a lot of arguments like, well, EVs aren't paying their fair share of gas tax. It's something that our legislature addressed last year. We're kind of following what a lot of states are doing in terms of a registration fee. But, you know, we're, even though that was settled, we're thinking ahead as a planning agency and sort of getting really involved in those discussions about road user charges and kind of looking at what's the next thing that is maybe a threat or a barrier. And so as the, you know, the coalition gathering stakeholders throughout this process, so whether it was, you know, whether it's corridor designations or VW funding or infrastructure bill funding, that coalition work and looking down the road at what the next things are and what those barriers are to adoption is going to be key.
And you mentioned the recently passed infrastructure bill. What future efforts are planned in Oklahoma for continuing to expand charging infrastructure and promote EV adoption?
Well, I'm confident in the work of Leon and others that, you know, in many ways, because of the leadership that was displayed throughout the development of Charge OK. I think we've kind of got a blueprint. We've got, you know, the corridors that we've lined out, the network that we've lined out. And so it's a matter of, you know, getting the band back together, looking at what the gaps are. Hopefully, you know, in looking at the network, it's, you know, are there opportunities for innovation? One of the things that I'm really curious about and working with other Clean Cities coordinators on is working with our Ubers and Lyfts of the world, the TNCs, and you know, they've made solid commitments to electrification. And so is there airport charging for TNCs that we need to look at, or the, you know, locations that they're dropping off at, in addition to those, you know, traditional interstate type travel locations that will definitely be prioritized.
Great. And is there anything else you want to add before we close, or any further advice for others looking to do similar work?
You know, I think, you know, part of our message is, you know, in some ways, the charging network is a bit of luck, but it also was a lot of work, you know, from multiple Clean Cities coordinators over two decades of solidifying policies in place that really encouraged adoption to, you know, as opportunities came up, aligning the stakeholders in your region, in your state, and the areas you cover to take advantage of those opportunities. At the end of the day, it's about leadership and the folks making those decisions, whether it was on VW or other things. It was really, you know, backed by a Clean Cities Coalition, stakeholders that were aligned with similar visions.
I'm ready to see a bunch of F-150s driving around all over Oklahoma.
Wouldn't that be great?
Thanks, Eric and Leon, for joining us and sharing your experiences with EV charging infrastructure build-out in Oklahoma. Stay tuned for future episodes on ethanol, vehicle-to-building, and electric school bus resources.
That's it for this episode of On the Go. As we wrap up, I want to thank the U.S. Department of Energy's Vehicle Technologies Office and our team here at the National Renewable Energy Lab for their support. Also, a big thanks to Brittany Conrad and Vern Slocum, our podcast editors. We couldn't do it without you.
If you want to learn more about Clean Cities and its partnerships to develop affordable, efficient, and clean transportation options to accelerate the development and widespread use of a variety of innovative transportation technologies, visit cleancities.energy.gov.